All right, let's head out to the studio in the sky. It's our cloud studio. Boy, technology, I tell you what. Joe Sinnott, he's out in the Marcellus, Appalachia. Joe, is it Appalachia or Appalachia?
Well, it depends where you are. I think basically north of the Mason-Dixon line, south Mason-Dixon line, that's going to dictate whether you go with Appalachia or Appalachia. So,
And of course, that's Joe Sinnott. He's with Whitting Partners, and he's the host of the Energy Detox podcast. And before we jumped on to the official hit record interview, we did our 2 minutes of chit chat of just checking how things were doing and everything. And I got to be honest, it looks like you haven't shaved yet on a Monday morning. So the word disheveled comes to mind because normally, you're like a some sort of nightly news anchor. You're usually well groomed, maybe even have a little pancake makeup on because the light reflects. Are you in audit season, Joe? Because it seems like it's that I just went through it last week, so I'm very attuned to it. To where, when you start going through personal audit season, company audit season, wife and husband sit down at the kitchen table audit season. All of a sudden, you know what? Your clothes and your hygiene take a back seat at times. It's for a very short window of time, mind you. But Joe, it's kind of like Professor Plum in the conservatory with the candlestick, is what I'm observing this morning. How's life in your world going?
well, I thought it was good, Jason. Although now I need to, I guess, audit my appearance here, because yeah, I thought I was fresh. I shaved this morning. Maybe it's the
Wait, did you?
maybe it's those Italian jeans there. Maybe it's whatever o'clock shadow here we are. Fast growing facial hair. It's a curse and a blessing.
Maybe you've got some high definition camera lens because it does look a little scruff right there, actually. And so,
Man, that's
but
good. Or I missed a spot. Yeah, like I said, I guess yeah, I need a personal grooming audit apparently. So, other than that, Jason,
oof.
things are good here as
We
we
call that
press
a
on.
Monday morning fail here, folks. This is our live, and these are all kinds of fun here,
Hey, I
but.
say, Jason, you want transparent, open feedback, and that's, I'd say, I'd rather people err on the side of saying, "Hey, how's it going there?" It's a quick aside, Jason, as we start, I run into situations, clearly from a coaching standpoint, where I'm getting feedback from people, and I'll hear that sometimes, be like, "Hey, so and so, he's looking a little off, looking like he's kind of going through the ringer." And that individual might not even realize that he or she is giving that appearance. And that's great feedback, right? Because if things are good, the last thing you want to do is create some sort of narrative. So
Well,
again, call
last
it an
week,
audit, call it a radical transparency, whatever it is. I
just
appreciate
to
the
give you a little
observation.
context here, last week I stopped into the bank, and I was kind of wearing a just kind of a, a Lululemon type of an outfit, right? I wasn't. It's not like I had a normally when I go to the bank, I have a collared shirt on, okay? But for some reason I didn't today, and the bank manager asked me if everything was okay because it was the first time he ever saw me in something that wasn't, that was it. Just one thing was off in his world. And whenever we get around April 15th, not only do personal taxes kick in, but that just stems into small businesses and a number of different things. And so when the supply chain is impacted, then the oil companies and the majors and the corporations become impacted because the small businesses tend to run more on family dynamics, whereas corporations just run on annual meetings and that's it type of a thing. And so I do apologize for my horrible transition to the auditing season because, in addition to what I apparently thought was high definition stubble, was also your verbal cues when we were kind of leading up to this interview that led me to believe that, it is a good time to talk about the self audit, the company audit, the HR audit, if you will, because audits are more than financial. They really are. In fact, we have the NFL draft coming up in your town of Pittsburgh there, and that's another whole audit. Companies right now are going through their talent audit to find out what role players are gonna, not superstars. We we used to joke in the sports broadcasting world that a draft like the one coming up, there's no sex appeal, there's no big names, so it's a vegetable draft, not a meat draft. It's not a steak draft. And it's a good idea to look at companies like that, because too many chefs in the kitchen or too many steaks at the table, and you're not getting a well-balanced meal or a well-balanced mind, if you will, Joe. So let's start with that. Let's go and, you know, if you want to personalize it, you can, just because of, like I said, a few of the cues that I thought you were kind of going through it so your mind would be there. But let's talk about some of the internal audits and company audits and executive audits, if you will, because, hey, 'tis the season, man.
Yeah, well, hearing you say all that, Jason, I think the first thing is that, you know, April 15th comes around every year no matter what. So, you know, for better or for worse, it is a time to force people or small businesses or, you know, whatever, into doing something out of the ordinary, right? Something that you're not doing the rest of the 365 days typically. And that's not a bad thing, right? You know, people might fret over it or, you know, complain about it or file for an extension to push things a couple months. But either way, you know, it forces you to hit the pause button, take a look at some things, and, you know, potentially uncover something that could help you in the subsequent 12 months. And again, how often do we do that on non-tax related things? Hit the pause button. You know, by and large, everybody's what, Jason? Busy. Everybody's so busy. So, you know, I guess my initial comment to that is, whether you're talking about tax season, whether you're talking about the NFL draft, which again comes around every year, it forces people to pause, to evaluate things, to figure out what they need, figure out what they don't need. And again, question of, well, why do we have to wait until that magical date each year? Can we not do that more frequently? Can we do that almost on a continuous basis? So that's where my mind goes with this, Jason, because that's a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis, right? Coaching people, you know, it's forcing them to slow down. It's forcing them to hit the pause button, because, you know, a lot of us, especially those who I work with in the oil and gas industry, we're not wired to hit the pause button unless we're forced to do so. So anyway, that's my high-level thought, at least, on all things annual audit, figurative, literal, and everywhere in between.
How would you connect with somebody in a decision-making capacity to help them understand how valuable talent observation can be? And I'm not, that's not the right word, and I'm trying to figure out what the right word is, because, you know, it's an intangible thing, and it's something that you can put a dollar figure on eventually, but it might take a little time. And we're going to talk, you know, we'll just fold in the NFL draft, for example. You know, people are getting cut with guaranteed salaries. Like, take a look at what the Denver Broncos did with Russell Wilson. It was unheard of. And now there's three other organizations that have done the same thing. Recently, Tua Tagovailoa, sorry about mispronouncing there, in Miami, and Kyler Murray, or as we like to say in Minnesota, Kyle McCarthy. Nobody knows how to pronounce his name in Minneapolis. It's so funny. We've had four different mispronunciations of Kyler Murray's name in the Minneapolis media. It's fantastic. But those were guaranteed salaries. And a lot of times in big corporations, they do have guaranteed salaries. And so meetings are had where, hey, let's hang on to the CEO, the CFO, this sales executive, whatever the C-suite executive position is, because it's a guaranteed salary. When the Denver Broncos cut Russell Wilson with like a $60 million guaranteed against their cap, that actually, to me, what I heard was, oh, he's doing that much damage, huh? Okay, so his actual appearance is making that ship go the wrong way, because corporations are like big vessels, man. They're slow, they move along, and you got little tugboats and speedboats, a small business trying to show them where to go. And that's how I looked at it, Joe. How would you even coach that? I mean, you're an executive coach here, and you bring that into the corporate world, trying to explain to someone, yeah, I understand they're guaranteed, but you want your bottom line hit, you got to get rid of them. It's just, or make a change. Make a change, sure, might be the better way to say it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the go-to is to give it a name, and that name in business and in life is sunk cost, right? It's the sunk cost fallacy, sunk cost economics. It's, this overemphasis on what's already been spent or what's already been committed to. And that kills people, Jason. The number one thing that I always hear from people is, oh, I feel stuck, Joe. I feel stuck. Well, one of the things that gets people stuck is this sunk cost approach where, hey, look, we've already committed. I've already spent this money. And that's when people are prevented from moving forward. And again, Jason, I mean, that's clear in business, clear in sports, where, again, sometimes you just, if you're focused on the future, so what if you've committed $60 million to an individual? But again, bringing it back to an individual's life, well, it's easier said than done when you've already committed to whatever, a vacation or I don't know, a timeshare or a new vehicle or a house or whatever. And that's what holds people back. And even on the smaller things, Jason, I find this all the time, routines or, people who are, physically buried in clutter. Ah, well, all these things, I bought these things and yeah, I don't really need it. And, clearly there's whole books, there's whole industries, Jason, on decluttering, but it's really all the same philosophy, whether you're talking about decluttering a house or a basement or a closet or decluttering an organization or a team of talent that isn't needed. And it's to say, look, if you were to start fresh today, would you bring this individual, would you bring this stuff back into your life? And if the answer is no, well, again, that's a pretty compelling case to say, all right, well, who cares what you've committed to? Who cares what you've already spent? Again, all easier said than done, Jason, but the first thing is to call it what it is, which is, the impacts of sunk costs.
So how do you sit somebody down and coach them through explaining that to somebody? Again, go back to Minnesota, where JJ McCarthy was a top 10, 11 pick, and they had high hopes for him. And when they put him out into reality, the expectations in reality didn't match up. And now they had to go and invest more money. Actually, the irony is in this situation, they got a talent upgrade with less money because of someone else paying the salary, if you will. But that's interesting too, because sometimes less is more, and companies can spend less and get ahead too. So anyway, but so take JJ McCarthy for example, because he's had his expectations now change three times in 3 years from the person signing his check. But that's based on his performance. That was based on his performance. It wasn't based on the organization. I think that would be hard for someone to accept or understand in today's world. I would think that would be difficult for somebody to discuss with an employee. Have you run into that at all? These types of expectation imbalances?
Oh, of course. And again, like you said, Jason, there's no quick fix, but the worst thing you could do is not address it, right? The worst thing you could do is not be able to tie current performance, current realities to some sort of long-term vision goal that either the individual has, JJ McCarthy, or whether the organization has, or the coach has. If you can't pause and say, hey, wait a second, here's where these things are disconnected, and speak just factually, objectively. Well, that's not going to do anybody any good. And again, the longer you go, the more difficult it is to rectify. So that's the one piece, Jason. I think on the other end, and you might have been getting at this a little bit, looking at it from an organizational standpoint, where the organization, realizes, or a general manager, whoever says, hey, wait a second here, this isn't working out. Again, equally tough to proceed. But in my approach, again, typically, it starts with getting the organization, the individual, the leader to say, all right, well, what would it feel like if we severed ways with, if we separated from whomever, whatever the investment was, whoever the individual is? Get them sitting with that. And again, 9 times out of 10, Jason, it's pretty clear. It's like, oh, that would actually be great. What if that individual left voluntarily? What would that feel like? Oh, that'd feel great. Anchor them on that feeling. And again, yes, I talk feelings with, people in the C-suite. They still have feelings. That's powerful. And then you start working backwards. Then you start working backwards on the, okay, well, how do we convey that to the powers that be that, again, we're going to look at you and feel like, oh, well, you royally screwed up. How do you approach that? How do you get comfortable with that? And again, they're very tactical, logical things you can do there. But if you can't sit with that feeling that we all agree that says, hey, fresh start, forward-looking, progressive, whatever, you know, if people can't get that feeling, Jason, then it just becomes this, you know, numbers exercise, excuses exercise, and it's, you know, very difficult for me to actually help people get any sort of meaningful momentum.
Most issues are resolved with proper communication, and a lot of people have a difficult time communicating. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why organizations like yours can come in so handy and can really speed up things, almost like an arbitrator or liaison or interpreter might be the better way to put it, that you're more of an executive interpreter. And when you look at, you know, like, somebody's coming into an organization and they can either hold it up or they can move it forward. And if they're holding it up, generally there is some issues. And I got to be honest, Joe, in my lifetime, I've seen this softening of workplaces happen. I've seen tiptoeing happen to where, you know, I came from the media, and so we had to be very, I mean, we would take classes on you know, political correctness, basically, because we were the original get canceled people. You say the wrong thing and you're out of a job, because, you know, nobody's going to listen to you anymore. And now amplify that on social media. So I take a look at, you know, that's brought into a workplace now, and man, we're having so many different conversations, and we've been so connected more and more and more. How much of your job is just interpretation? Because I would think that the more I'm organically asking this question, which I'm not sure if I'm even there yet, but expectations and communications, obviously, what drives organizations. And so what's going on the communication side? Because, man, I can't even talk to my son anymore, and he's 20. You know, we're speaking different languages on a regular basis. Like, when he's around his friends, I don't even know how to talk to him. So I can't even imagine what it would be like for a CEO. Well, because, like, just for an example, when I would go to a strategy meeting in a workplace, because I was a consultant for years, the way people, and an editor, and so I'm very, very sensitive to people's language. The sentences would start with, I think. And I mean, that's an accountability statement there, because they're putting themselves out there. I think this should be it. So if it goes wrong, my mind is to blame. Well, then I noticed about 10, 15 years ago, the word I feel started being ushered into strategy meetings. Now it's a whole different ball game, because the person who says I feel takes control of the entire narrative of the room. Because if you challenge it, now you're attacking their feelings, not the strategy or the idea. And that's been one of the issues I've found with CEOs and generational gaps, is just some little wordsmithing things that completely change the context of conversations. I don't know if you've ran into that specific example or anything around those, you know, emotion versus logic, facts over feelings type of a thing. But talk to me a little bit about that, because, man, that's one of my biggest frustrations, is trying to, you know, get a horse to drink water and keep dunking his head in, because you just drink already, you know. Eventually you get to that point where you run out of ideas, you know. So talk to me a little.
Yeah, two things on the thinking and the feelings of leaders. One is that it's amazing how often leaders don't share what they're thinking or feeling or suspecting when they should. You know, obviously there's the standard of, hey, you know, they should be the last ones to speak in a room, right? You know, senior leadership, let others people go. You don't want to bias their opinions. But at some point, you need to convey what you're thinking or where you're worried or whatever. And again, that's one miss, is that a lot of leaders don't convey that. And what does that do? Well, it creates a void, which, again, that might not be a very helpful narrative in some cases. So that's number one, Jason.
Can I push pause on that for a second?
Yeah,
because
please.
I have never, ever heard that before. And in my world, the media world, that is extremely important. And it is a huge pet peeve of people trying to run a radio show, for example. Now, podcasting is different because you don't have any timelines. Radio, hey, man, 4 minutes and 52 seconds is 4 minutes and 52 seconds. Not 55, not 53, it's 52. Because the person that pays the bills has a commercial waiting for you. It's like one program person always told me that I'm 50 minutes of filler for the 10 minutes of commercials that pay for my hour. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, hey, you just put me in my place pretty well there, buddy. Thank you. But you understand. But my point is, though, is that the host generally tries to grab control of the conversation, the narrative, and the show because they have this handoff of the supply chain logistics that is involved with a radio station, for example. Newspapers no different. You know, you got deadlines and, you know, it's a different process because there's printing presses and 50 bodies of people in between. So, and the radio thing though, media attracts glory hounders and type A personality, okay? That's, you got people, and so when somebody's running a show and they're trying to hand it off to the, you know, the commercial in a seamless way, you always get somebody that wants the last word. And so that they're going to try to insert their voice in because they're so used to having the last word. I never thought of it from the leadership power play. It was always a power play in my mind, but I never thought of it in the powers of good. which is, hey man, if you're in a room and you're the leader, yeah, you're damn right, man. You should have the last word. And if somebody tries to give the last word, put them in their place and say, nope, I'm the leader in this position. I mean, that's how I would do it. And of course, that's probably why I have a company of one. But you understand what I mean, to where that is a big deal to keep the narrative, and it can keep the hierarchical control, I guess, because that is needed in a workplace. Insert in, because I never thought of it like that. That's important for a lot of business owners to really understand that whoever has the last word generally ends up with the narrative and the control of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to add to that, Jason, the point I was making is that there's a lot of leaders who, again, it's a matter of consciousness, right? It's, hey, you don't want to necessarily have the last word if it's going to stifle the flow of ideas, if it's going to stifle creativity. You know, that clearly, if you're surrounded by talent, you want to tap into that talent. You want the ideas to keep flowing. So even if it's not the last word, Jason, all I'm saying is it's amazing how often I see leaders who, you know, they feel like they need to stop talking at some point. They, you know, they hold back, again, consciously or unconsciously. And it's amazing how much extra gyrations and energy is wasted because they're not imparting that clarity on their team. Sometimes you need to bias your team, or at least have them understand where your bias is. So yes, it needs to be something that's on the mind of a leader. So you don't go one direction or the other, mm-hmm. right, Jason? It's, hey, I'm in charge. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to direct things. I'm going to, you know, just rule, just so clear and so prescriptive. You know, yeah, there was a time and a place, but you can't go the other direction and again be soft and just allow chaos to ensue because you think that that's what people are looking for.
Yeah, and you know, in the media world, like we would, what you're talking about, we would see this happen, and I saw the evolution of this too, because by definition a leader does have to make tough decisions. And so when you've got, you know, your different managers and things like that, you know, we'd start with the idea room type of a thing. And then the manager would make a decision like, okay, the sports editor was a manager and he'd have to come to the publisher and say, I think the lead story on Saturday should be XYZ. and then the edit and the entertainment and all these different things, right? So this publisher is getting all kinds of different ideas coming in that are already predetermined for him. But then he might look at the sports editor and say, what other ideas did you have? Then the sports editor would open up and talk about their meeting room. I think that's the part that's missed, is that there's this, when there's a manager room of managers, generally there is a manager, there's a super manager, generally. There's a super boss above all the other bosses. And so many people get either set in their ways or they're afraid to go outside of the thing they just committed to. That's the part that I think is kind of a lost and a little bit of C-suite today, because whether it's, hey, bragging on social media, so they got to go die on their social media hill, or whatever it might be. I've just seen that more and more, because like I said, back in the media days, we would have open conversations, and 9 times out of 10, the idea that would come in would get changed, because now we had a room of 10 other people that would add their insight that is outside the silo, that is outside that, you know what I mean, that vertical integration of just the sports department, although their vote would mean more because it's their area of expertise. But the newspaper's trying to please everybody, the magazine, you know what I'm saying? And so, and that's how I look at a lot of companies like that too. So anyway, I just thought I'd add that, Joe, because I do think that element of communication is missing. And I see you offering that as a solution, you know, for a lot of companies. And right now, with the confusion that's going on in the world of whether they're an oil company, an energy company, a carbon management company, when you have an identity crisis, your whole company's confused. Your whole company is confused. And right now, many energy companies are confused. And with social media, they're putting conflicting messages out all the time. So anyway, I'm going to step down and let you talk, and then we'll get to some draft analogies type of a thing, because anyway, I didn't realize I was going to be so chatty Cathy this morning.
Hey, that's okay. And again, you got me thinking. I guess, so the one thing I'll build on though, Jason, in terms of a desire by many leaders and many companies to, you know, solicit new ideas, you know, creativity. Again, a lot of companies, a lot of individuals, they have the best of intentions. Or what I see and where I come in a lot is that their ability to execute and actually extract those ideas from people, get people to think, that's where they fall short. Again, they go into it, they're asking what they think are the right questions to say, well, what else? You know, what do you think? And again, all those little things, which is a great foundation. But then when it comes to actually executing, you know, common mistakes I see. One, Jason, is, you know, not holding the silence, right? Again, everybody's go, go, go. And again, probably some parallels to you in radio, right? You know, dead air and silence, that could be a killer, right? But in a room, in person, the best thing you could do is, if you really want people to think and be creative, you throw a question out there and then you resist the urge to fill the silence, right? That's tough for a lot of people. Take some practice, but it's key if you really are intent on, you know, soliciting the input, the ideas of other people. Another example that I see, Jason, is when people do share what's on their mind, they do share their feelings, their thoughts, whatever, they don't then follow up in a very sincere way with a proper tone to say, but please tell me where I'm wrong. Please tell me where I'm misguided. And again, it's not a yes or no question. It's not, am I wrong? It's, you know, tell me in what ways I'm wrong. Maybe it's just a little thing. But again, it's another thing that a lot of leaders with the best of intentions, they miss. And that can make a world of difference to show that, hey, look, I suspect that I'm maybe only 60% right in this case, or maybe 50%. Maybe it's just a toss-up. So this is what I think. This is what I feel. This is what I think I know. But please tell me where I might be off base. If you can do that in an effective way, Jason, that actually encourages and allows people to give their responses, that's an order of magnitude better than somebody who just thinks they're being, again, open and soliciting ideas and trying not to have the last word and all of these other things. So again, there's a whole litany of other tactics and approaches that you can take to make sure that the conversations are actually flowing. But those are just a couple examples, Jason, of things that I see all the time that, you know, are actually not terribly difficult to fix if somebody's there to help you fix them.
And that's a big part of it. A lot of this stuff is very simple and on paper, in nature, if you will. But in reality, it's very difficult for a lot of reasons, and mostly just because of the human nature of people that a lot of people have a difficult time, whether it be from courage or self-awareness or just communication in general. That's literally where 99% of the problems come from. And when you talk about all these different people, man, that's a lot of dynamics. That's just a lot of random personalities trying to mesh. And it's so funny in smaller offices, you know, when they do mesh, all of a sudden they start dressing alike, they start thinking alike. And, you know, it's so funny how the hive mentality really can set in on certain things. And like most things, you know, there's a balance. You know, too much of anything is not a good thing. I was just thinking, man, we should do a series on these types of things, because these single attributes are so important in the whole scheme of things, you know. And I mentioned earlier, you know, one sentence can completely, or one word can completely change the entire context of a professional setting. And so, I mean, just what I mentioned, that I feel versus I think, that should be a 400 level Harvard class taught right now, because of how much that has impacted our world today. And I'm going to bring this back to what I was once told by a billionaire who actually invented the internet for real, Rob Roberts. You can look it up. And he's the Roaring Lions Ranch. He invented the local area network, okay, the LAN, the L-A-N. So if you see that down in your, this guy invented that. And he's up there with Steve Jobs and Wozniak. And he's, anyway, so when I interviewed him in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, he said one of the most profound things, as his wife was sitting right next to him off camera, was that 90% of successful CEOs have successful marriages. And he said that a lot of people think that, you know, that's because of who they are, this and that. He said, but what I've found, it's because when you're at work, you can't show your weaknesses that you can show your wife. And so your wife is your greatest asset to your business, because when you go home, you have to use her as a person to accept your weaknesses and bring you up and enhance and enable you. So when you go to work, your employees do not see those weaknesses, because your culture will change the minute they see those weaknesses. And this was a very mild-mannered man. I mean, you know, this was unbelievable. And that resonated with me. And it's difficult to do, obviously, because, you know, you've got different dynamics involved and a number of different trust issues and a number of things like that. But it landed. I understood what he was talking about. And from a business standpoint, Joe, is that an issue in today's day and age, where if you show your weaknesses like this at work, that can change the entire culture, whether it be the jackals or somebody trying to help you, and now they're no longer trying to help the company, but trying to help you. I mean, there's a lot of variables that can go into this. Pop question, and I can see the wheels going in your head right now as you're trying to formulate and articulate how to impromptuly answer a very complex and layered question. But let's just start with the comment of, you know, your wife is your greatest asset to your business. You're married. I would imagine you would agree with that, whether you believe it or not. You would agree with it just because you want to stay married and this and that. But he was, in my opinion, he was right. And I'm not married. I've never been married. But I totally understood that was missing in my life. That was missing, was that for me, you know, the Catholic priest confessional, if you will, but at home. So go ahead and comment on that.
Yeah, well, actually, my mind was going to confession as well, Jason. You know, it's, you know, there's so many different outlets, you know, a diverse ways to process, right? To share your thoughts, to confess, you know, literally or figuratively, what's on your mind. I get some of that from a coaching standpoint. Certainly, there's different things that people would share with a spouse. There's obviously, you know, different specific things that somebody might share with a priest. There's things that you're going to share with your manager. There's things you're going to share with HR. And, you know, there's going to be hopefully some consistency there, but no doubt that different avenues are going to extract different thoughts, different feelings, different emotions, you know, remove certain amounts of baggage and clutter and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, that makes sense from a very human standpoint, Jason. And again, I run into that a lot. What I do is not therapy. I need to be very clear that, you know, there is a clear line. It's in my contracts and everything else that, you know, I'm not a certified therapist, but certainly, you know, people will comment that it's therapeutic. You know, it's amazing how often people will say, Joe, I haven't shared this with anybody else. And a lot of what I do is, you know, well, encouraging them to share certain elements, whether it's with a spouse, whether it's with an employee, whether it's with their boss or whatever. So yeah, everything you're sharing, Jason, makes sense. But again, it comes back to having different tools, different avenues, different ways to process what you're thinking. And again, you know, would be remiss not to acknowledge the fact that we're in this AI age where people are using the likes of ChatGPT to do the same thing. And that's not bad, as long as you still have multiple avenues, multiple ways to do things. Processing, you know, thinking out loud with a ChatGPT, well, that's just something to add to the list of people like priests and spouses and HR folks and therapists and coaches and everybody else. Having access to all of those resources, again, as long as you're conscious and you're aware of what those resources are, you know, what they're costing you in terms of time and energy and money, that's not a bad thing, Jason.
Are you finding people are using ChatGPT quite a bit and AI when it comes to communication?
Oh, 100%. And well, again, it depends what you mean by communication. If it comes to just being able to think out loud and actually have somebody listen and digest and connect the dots and turn it into something else, absolutely. Which again is very similar to what any of these people that we were just talking about do, myself included, which is, hey, this is what I think I heard from you. This is what I think I'm hearing from your team, from those around you. It's not uncommon, Jason, for me to have conversations with spouses of the people that I'm working with. And again, to, you know, still maintaining anonymity, but, you know, painting a full, complete picture, including a picture painted by spouses, loved ones, for me to say, this is what I think I'm seeing and hearing. Is it true? Well, how true is it? That's incredibly valuable, Jason, right? For somebody to jump in and say, actually, Joe, no, here's what I think you're missing. Or, oh, shoot, no, I didn't realize that I was conveying that. And if I, as the coach, have had multiple conversations with multiple different people and I'm getting a consistent picture, well, there's going to be merit to it. And the beauty is I can do that with, you know, without violating the seal of confession, if you will, you know, the confidentiality that I have and need to maintain with the individuals that I'm speaking with. But using all of those individuals to paint a clear picture that, again, is not going to divulge anything that any specific individual said, that's incredibly valuable, Jason, for somebody to stop and say, well, you know, whether it's true or not, clearly that's, you know, that's what I, as the leader, are conveying, Joe. So, yeah, let's talk about how to, you know, what to do with all that information.
I could see you doing a whole seminar on Beyond AI. It would be so hard to weed out and vet and believe employees today, because if they're using AI, it's not them. They're just a middle pusher, if you will, a middleman, middle woman, whatever you want to call them in the middle. And that's not good, because if they're just taking your words, typing it into AI, and then just bringing it back, that's not sustainable. Now, what I look at, Joe, and this is where I think your mind could really expand on this for the corporate world, is that I'll never forget when I was covering some event down in Minneapolis. It must have been a Vikings or a Timberwolves game, because I would go down for those mostly. Everything else, I'd kind of let someone else do. And I used to listen to NPR on the way back, because we didn't have internet. We just had radio. And if I didn't have my mix CD or mix tape, I would generally listen to AM radio, right? Keep the mind moving while you're driving, especially at night. And the conversation was really cool. It was, you know, three or four talking heads type of thing, or think tanks, or authors, or anyway, they were intellects. They were definitely intellects. And what they were talking about was, what is the purpose of the internet? Like, what value is the internet? And it sounds like a very ridiculous question. Mm-hmm. But when you start asking people and you start getting a diversity of answers, that's when, of course, sociologists and anthropologists and those high-level think tank people are like, oh, well, this is impacting people in a lot of different weird ways, and this and that and everything. And so what those four came down to was that, and I agree with this, is what the internet did is it became a tool to make us become who we are much faster. And for me, I was an early adapter of the internet because I'm a research hound, I'm a writer. And so I'm constantly exploring new areas of the mind. And I used to go to the library down in the basement where the microfiche is, to do research on newspapers, because that's what was documented. And I understand that, you know, every culture has, you know, their documentarians and this and that, and that's what interests me. I don't get into porn. I don't get into a lot of sports gambling. I don't get into gaming, but I'll sit and I'll go down a rabbit hole all night long, because that's stimulating to me. And that's what I did with AI. I've been using AI for over 5 years, but because I was a publisher of a magazine and a newspaper. So AI is just a writer to me. I kick in the stuff and I edit it back and this and that. And so I'm learning and I'm using it as a tool. I'm not using it as a replacement for me. So what I'm seeing now is a lot of people in the workplace, they're using AI just as a complete replacement for them. They seem to think that, like I said, going to a meeting, listening to some things, half listening, taking notes, and then going back to the desk and punching that in on AI, and then just spend the rest of the day on social media. Sorry, folks, that ain't gonna last next year. That's the summer of layoffs is coming if you're one of those people. But I think there's a lot of those, Joe, to be honest. And so that's what I'm saying, but I think you could actually do pretty well as a beyond the AI and help people identify some of these chameleon employees, I guess. I don't even know the way, because they're not bad people. They're not bad. 99% of the people in the world are very good people. But in today's day and age, so many people are in flight or flight all the time, because when you're living check to check, you're constantly feeling like a tiger's chasing you in the jungle. So you're in this fight or flight mentality. And when you're in fight or flight, you're just not thinking clearly. You're just not. And so, and I've been debt free for 15 years. So I think differently. My moves are a little more intentional and that sort of thing. But anyway, talk to me a little bit about that, with the AI and the identification, and take it whatever direction you want, because I just kind of did a pipe bomb there.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of directions we can go with AI, Jason. We can probably talk for hours on it, but I guess a couple of the things you said, you know, thinking more clearly. That's, you know, at the end of the day, that's my job as a coach, is to help people think more clearly, to enter in with the assumption that they've got the skills, the experience, the talent, the desire to go forth and do great things. But sometimes they need to slow down and think more clearly. You know, it's conscious leadership, right? That's the name of my company, Witting Partners. The whole idea that, again, Jason, so many people are unwittingly going down a path that's going to, you know, lead them astray. They're unwittingly putting their foot in their mouth. They're unwittingly, you know, over-relying on something like AI and, you know, suppressing the value that they actually bring that, you know, used to be unique. So, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's thinking clearly. So in terms of my approach these days, it is all about conscious leadership in the age of AI. How do you increase your consciousness and your awareness while using AI as a tool, while acknowledging and dealing with the realities of AI, Jason? So that's, you know, that's the overarching theme that I incorporate into a lot of my work, you know, even a lot of the public facing stuff, because that resonates, right? Conscious leadership in the age of AI, that's powerful. Now, in terms of What do you do about it? How do you avoid being one of those people that is not going to have a job before too long because of the approach that you just described? Well, one of the simplest things that I use a lot, especially with people in career transition, Jason, is, all right, well, what do you do differently from everybody else? What is it that you're the only person that's capable of doing or doing to some degree? Getting people to speak in those terms, and again, not in some sort of fluffy way, but to really say, okay, are you that unique? Or are you just trying to sound like everybody else, consciously or unconsciously? Because if that's the case, Jason, what's the, I joke all the time, right? It's like, oh, congratulations, you're one in a million. So what does that mean? There's, 8,000 people on the planet that are just like you. I mean, so you need to go beyond being one in a million. You might think you're unique, you might think you're different, but if you can't articulate it, and more importantly than articulating it to other people, actually act upon it and believe it. Yeah, guess what? You're not going to be around much longer in the workforce in your current capacity. So again, those are just a few of many thoughts, Jason. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's how do you think more clearly when you have all of these tools out there that are kind of doing a lot of the thinking or so-called thinking for you.
Was just thinking too that glory hounding should be added to the list of things to identify in the AI world. In the media it stands out, obviously. People that, climbers and step on backstabbers and this and that. And I see it on social media where people are using social media as a like they think it's like some nightly news or MTV show or something along those lines. And it's just different. It's a different world we're living in, really, where so many chameleons out there where you're not really sure what you're getting, and that's why I was saying that I honestly, I think a series like that where just identifying professionals in today's unprofessional world, it'd be just fantastic. I really do. The other series I think that we should do in May, Joe, and I want you to really consider this. I really do, because I think this would be very beneficial for a lot of people, is so May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And this Route 66 thing that I'm doing in June now, I pushed it back to June. I was going to do Memorial Day, but I've got a few other things. So like in July 4th, I'm going to be in right outside of Tulsa at a soapbox derby race, broadcasting. And yeah, that's actually sponsored by Red Bull. And then we've got Gallup at Route 66 Rides, sponsored by Exxon. And that is cool because it's classic cars. At the finale, it's hot air balloons and classic cars, basically. And so for the finale, they take all the balloons and line them up on Main Street. And then they ride the cars down the road at sunset and then blast the fire. And so it's a tunnel of fire that these classic cars go under. And so I changed my schedule to match that. And part of the Route 66 thing for me was, I mentioned this before, the year of Jubilee, where, every 49 years, according to the biblical teachings, you're supposed to do a year of reset. And I'm 50 now, so I need to do it. I need to take some time off and just, still work, but, do more of mental health awareness type of thing. And you're supposed to do it to the land every 7 years. There's a whole, whole teaching on self-preservation and rejuvenation and restarts and that sort of thing. So anyway, in my entrepreneur mind, I'm trying to put this all together where I can do everything at once. You know how that goes. And I think we should do that for the professional world. I think a mental health and wellness corporate edition would do really well. I think people would react to it. And I don't know what the topics would be, Joe. That's why I have to re rely on you. But I mean, a quick 4-part series or something like that on how, okay, mental health is actually company-wide now, because we're working on it individually, but company culture has so much to do with mental health. And what we just talked about are so many different reasons why, you know, like, for example, like the I feel versus I think thing. As soon as somebody says I feel, other people now shut up. They now know they no longer have the courage because, you know, the boss's daughter or the manager's cousin or whatever, you know, whatever, the person that goes to lunch once a week with so-and-so said something, just things like that. So I think there's a lot to do with the mental health when it comes to the corporate culture, company culture, that would really resonate with a lot of people. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's definitely, it's been something for years, Jason, that I've again, rarely explicitly incorporated, but I agree 100%. It really does deserve, it deserves to be, you know, focused upon, almost packaged up and made accessible for people. In fact, I had a name for it. I think I still have the URL, wellness workover, right? You know, you think in terms, you know, an oil and gas term, you work over a well, so that what? You know, you invest some time, you invest some money, you know, maybe the well's shut in for some period of time so that it can come back and keep flowing for years and flow stronger and more predictably and everything else. Well, you know, why wouldn't you do the same thing for yourself, for your personal wellness, for your leadership wellness, for your mental wellness, for your physical wellness, all of those things. So, you know, wellness workover, it's a, you know, it's an image that, again, a lot of people in oil and gas can sort of see, can feel, and typically acknowledge. That, yeah, that would be great. You know, this is what it would look like. This is what I would, I think, you know, I could see myself doing on the other end of a wellness workover. But how do you get there? How do you make it easy for people? How do you make it convenient, for lack of a better term? And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, Jason, which is, you know, a nice sort of packaged series to say, look, if you want to hit the pause button, we'll make it easy for you to, again, have this wellness workover, but not just for the sake of doing it, because you yourself have identified what's on the other side or what it would look like, right? You know, we all know if you got a well that's having some issues, it's costing you extra money to maintain it. You know, what is that well going to look like on the other side? And is it worth the investment? And again, when we're talking about wells, yeah, it might not be worth the investment. When we're talking about people, though, when you're talking about yourself, my hope is that everybody out there would agree, yeah, there's some sort of investment that's necessary so that I can start flowing to the extent that I know I'm capable of. So all that being said, Jason, as I process what you threw out there, I agree. It's one of those things that's sort of been percolating and under the surface for a while, although, again, I do have some, intellectual property there and wellnessworkover.com that maybe needs to be dusted off and packaged up.
Let's do it. March or May. Is 4 weeks, is that ample? Does it need to be 6, 8 weeks? What? Obviously 8 weeks would be better for the story being told, but, you know, May is only a month, but mental health goes much more beyond May. So it's not, we don't just focus in May on it, you know, that type of thing. But no, I think this would be great because, if you've already got work into it, it's going to be easier. And therefore, that even shows that you are the correct person to be talking about this. But for me, I'm looking at it where, hey, this could actually apply to, you know, the business. And that's some real value there, because I'll give you an example here quick. And I know we're getting close to an hour, and we try to keep these around 45 minutes to a half an hour. And so we're well into overtime here, but that's okay. A lot of times, annually I do this, if not more than that. You know, obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of the intangibles. Like, you know, there's the Renaissance era and, you know, just the whole communication and art and strategy. That's all intangible things, you know, but I like tires too. Tires and tangible things, you know. And glasses and whatever. When it comes to the intangible world, though, it's hard for people to understand that because it's, you know, invisible, even though we live in a world of Wi-Fi. In the world of oil and gas, the intangible world is extremely profitable and extremely valuable to the operator. And we can even go to the Hoover Dam down in Boulder City, Nevada. People don't know that Las Vegas was settled by the Mormons It wasn't settled by the mob. It was settled by the Mormons, because the Mormons were brought in to help build things, because the Mormons would bring in almost like a if a pastor wasn't available, then the Mormons would come in, because it would change the culture of the working environment. In Texas, this is documented too, where when they would bring a pastor in, the crew just started working differently. All of a sudden, just they started, whether they think of their wives or whether they would think about their soul or whether they would think about doing whatever it is, who knows? Mental health is individual to everybody, and everybody's journey is the same. But the sheer presence and the idea, and I interview a guy down in Texas all the time, Thomas Brewer is his name. His job is to go to well sites after an accident. That's it. That's his job. And he just sits there and sits next to somebody if they want him to sit next, and they don't talk or they do talk. That's the thing I'm talking about, to where all of a sudden your productivity changes. Your whole productivity changes because your mindset changes. And Joe, that's rooted in mental health. It really is at the end of the day. So that's the example I like to give people, is the building of the Hoover Dam and down in West Texas, when they started bringing in some of the pastors just to have a presence there. Work changes. It becomes more, less debauchery and more, you know, that type of thing. But, you know, hey, man, you know how it goes. You start passing the moonshine around, and midnight gets pretty quick. Bad decisions are made after 10 o'clock. So.
Yes. Less debauchery. I like that's a good, personal business plan for the year.
Yes.
What's your goal for the next 12 months? Less debauchery.
Wouldn't that be a fantastic annual meeting? Everybody would stand up and clap. It would be the most, it'd probably make the stock price go through the roof, because it wasn't some boring 20-minute speech. Okay. You know, Tim Cook of Apple just walks up there. Less debauchery, 2027, walks away.
Yeah, that's it, you know.
Anyway, so there's some fun homework. I like this. And if you want to send me whatever you have for, if you're going to dust off that old URL, great. Or if we just, you know, want to send people to Winning Partners, whatever you want to do on that, I'll, you know, you got a few weeks to decide on that. But I love the idea of May 1st. Let's do the corporate or company mental health, mental wellness. And what did you call it again? The something workover? Wellness workover?
Wellness workover.
Yes.
And heck,
okay.
You know, you could always throw another W in there and make it the Witting Wellness Workover. But that gets a little, you know, the W3.
I hear you there. Yeah. And you don't want to do glory hounding when you're going to tell people not to glory hound.
Well, right? There you go. You know,
but wait, that's branding. That's branding, right?
Consciousness, Jason, it comes back again to conscious leadership, conscious coaching, being aware of the trade-offs in all of your decisions, whether it's marketing, branding, committing of your time, how you conversate, etc.
Company consciousness, corporate consciousness, that's a very good heading or name right there. That's very good branding right there. So at any rate, well, let's kind of wrap up here a little bit. And I do want to just fire a couple draft things by your way here quickly. And so we'll try to keep each one very short for YouTube short purposes and people's time purposes. Okay, so we're talking about the NFL draft, and we're trying to match it to executive coaching. It's our little fun way of trying to tie the corporate world in with the toy department known as sports. In the world of media, we usually call the sports department the toy department, if anybody's wondering where that came from, because it's just fun. It's all speculation all the time, so you're never wrong until the games happen, and then you can argue about anything, why the Pittsburgh Steelers lost and the New England Patriots won. But okay, so when we're talking about draft here, Joe, we're talking about talent pipeline. Now, in the oil and gas world, how important is the talent pipeline? Because I see a lot of these organizations, all the way down to the high schools, giving money and educational awareness opportunities, whether it be the Society of Petroleum Engineers or the spotlight teen of the week that's not related to the person working at the organization, you know, whatever it might be. Talent pipeline, how does that equate in the world of executives?
Well, if executives don't have a pulse on what's coming down the pipeline in the next 10 years, whether that's on the skilled labor side, whether that's on the four-year or more degree side, I mean, they're not going to have a business. And, you know, the tricky thing right now, Jason, is, you know, you think about individual teams, individual companies, but, you know, you got to think about it from a league standpoint, if you will, to force in the NFL analogies. You know, the industry will not be able to do what it's committed to, what it says it's going to do, without talent from, again, all areas, labor, four-year degrees, everything in between.
Rookie detox. Sometimes when you bring in a rookie, you bring them in specifically for the new, fresh energy. At some point, that energy needs to either be reverted or detoxed because it's gone too far. In the world of the media, we call that the hype machine, that there's a difference between, you know, educating and hyping. Now, how would you equate that to the executive world, Joe?
Well, executives need to look at all things from a worst case scenario standpoint sometimes, Jason. You know, I bookend it, right? What's the worst case scenario if you bring in somebody that is, you know, potentially overhyped or is going to, you know, going to peter out from an energy standpoint? If that individual or group of individuals or some sort of initiative, you know, winds up fading over time, if that's the worst case, you know, get comfortable with that. You know, would you still want to proceed? Because otherwise, Jason, again, you're going to unwittingly, unconsciously assume that you're going to be able to maintain some sort of level that's not sustainable. So worst case scenario is my typical advice for executives all the way down to make sure that they don't unconsciously project something that's unrealistic.
Sometimes, too, when an energy comes into an organization, and I'm thinking about, you know, a quarterback or something like that coming into a, and it's no different than a sales manager or HR or something like that, because you're really getting behind them because they are technically the new leader of that area of expertise. And sometimes, like if it's a quarterback, it's of the team and the team identity, this and that. If it's of the center, well, then it's of, you know, the offensive line. If it's a corner, you know, so it's either of a department or of the organization. And sometimes you just have to go a new direction. And that can happen a lot of times with the rookie detox because, you know, it's just not, we've changed too much of who we are to satisfy their energy. Now we got to either get rid of them or just redirect their positive energy to be positive to us. Because, you know, most people, when they're putting out an energy, it's positive. That's why it's called a positive. You know, that's why you got the positive and the negative. The grounding is the negative, right? And the positive is the energy. So I just thought I'd add that quick. And then also wanted to, last one here. This is one of the most popular questions in any NFL draft. And also, it can be in your corporate culture too. Team needs versus best player available. Now, sometimes, Joe, you can be at a networking event or a conference and all of a sudden, oh my God, this guy's available? He's not looking for work? But we don't have a spot for him. What now? Randy Moss, one of the greatest wide receivers of all time, is available, but we already have three good wide receivers. Dennis Green, 3 seconds later, we'll take Randy Moss. So sometimes, you know, you do have to think about your team needs, but sometimes you just have to, you know what, if there's a good player available, it'll work. We'll just figure it out how to make it work. That's a tough one, Joe, because there you got to sell the general manager, you got to sell the owner, you got to, the three other wide receivers, you got to explain why all of a sudden the new wide receiver's coming in. So that is a very difficult, very, very difficult coaching tightrope, Joe. Talk to me about that.
No, it's communicating what you're thinking and feeling and what you're projecting in those instances. That's where that situation can go south, Jason. If you can't articulate to all those groups of people what your line of thought is, you know, what your sort of bet is, right? You know, you might say, hey, look, there is a 20 to 30% chance that this idea of going with the best player available instead of, fitting our clear needs is going to blow up on our face. But I think the upside far outweighs the downside. And so that's why I'm recommending we go down this path. Again, easier said than done, Jason, but it's when people get defensive and they overanalyze and everything else instead of saying, look, here's my bet, here's my guess. Again, tell me if you've got a better guess on how we should approach this. That's it. That's the, I mean, again, it's simple, Jason, but it's missed so often.
What is that saying? And just kind of wrapping it up here on about the tide lifts all boats or something, because when you can get the ship or the environment around you, that tide does lift everybody. And so sometimes, when you're working the whole company culture, that's what's going to lift your ship more than anything.
Yeah, Jason, and you talk about the value of the intangibles. That's a perfect example. The second, third, fourth degree impacts of a solid individual, a leader, or generational talent. You start quantifying those benefits beyond, their on-field performance. You start to get up to a pretty big number pretty quickly that, again, is far more again, not just that doesn't just look better on paper, but far more energizing than just trying to find the right person for the hole that we have in our team or our company. So again, you can quantify the value of going that I don't want to say illogical, but maybe that riskier direction.
And there you go, folks. Joe Sinnott, he's given more value today because generally, like I said, according to our polls, the 30 to 45 minute interview is what our audience listens to because they are in the vehicles quite a bit. You know that, Joe, right? That most of the people in the oil and gas industry, whether they're a CEO or a part runner, they're in their car for about 45 minutes to 3 hours every day. Driving to rigs and driving around town, this and that. And so, through the years, we've been in touch with a lot of our different audience. And right around that 45 minutes is what we get them for and that sort of thing. So we got a little overtime here today with Joe Sinnott as we went into it. But final thoughts, final words, Joe, as we wrap up here.
Oh, well, biggest theme out there without a doubt, Jason, is AI. And whether you're using AI to cement your draft picks and your plan of attack, nothing currently is going to replace the value of a good, conscious, aware leader to pull all of those tools like AI together. So, as any listeners out there, and yourself included, Jason, and myself included, go through the day. Take a second to say, all right, am I acting consciously? Am I aware? Or am I just going through the motions, plugging in numbers, getting an output, and then just running with it without taking a moment to hit the pause button and to say, all right, am I being a conscious leader? Or am I just essentially an unemployed person in waiting because AI is going to come in and start doing my thinking for me?
Joe Sinnott, everybody. Witting Partners is where you can find the website, and Energy Detox is the name of his podcast, and Witting Partners, as I mentioned, the name of the company. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.